Hey kids, it's Nick DiPaolo. I got a new special out called Another Senseless Killing. You're going to love it. Here's a couple clips. You can get it at nickdip.com.
And you guys in your 20s, you're so spoiled. You don't even know what bad porn is. You have no fucking idea. I'm 51 years old. You know the first thing I masturbated to? And this is the honest to God truth. The Indian on the Land O'Lakes Butterbox. If that's true, more people are dying from obesity than starvation. We're going to have to change those late-night commercials you see. You know, the little ones with the African kid sitting in the desert with a bowl of rice in front of him, flies all over his face. Going to have to replace him with a 400-pound Green Bay Packers fan sitting in his recliner with a pile of chicken wings on his lap, barbecue sauce in his hair. For just 20 cents a day, you can buy this fat fucker treadmill.
And for just $8, you can have that special. Go to nickdip.com. Thanks for your support, kids, and thanks for listening to the podcast.
You're listening to Band Geek with Richie Castellano on the Riotcast Network. Riotcast.com.
Hey, guys. Richie here. This is Band Geek episode 32. Before I go into my normal pre-show shtick, I want to talk about how cool it is to have a Nick DiPaolo promo at the front of my show. I'm a big Nick DiPaolo fan, and I actually got the opportunity to do the music for his podcast, which is also on the Riotcast Network. So check that out. And actually, the music you were hearing under the promo was the music that I did for the show, so that's really cool. Okay, now that I'm done patting myself on the back, let's go into it. Episode 32 is more on the geeky side of things. If you've listened to the show before, you'll know that we're huge Star Wars fans, Star Trek fans, we play video games, and our favorite video game is called Artemis, which is like it's a spaceship bridge simulator, that's what it's called, and it kind of combines the elements of like Star Trek and role-playing and LARPing, which is live-action role-playing, and of course we amped things up this past week, so we're going to document what we did because we had a lot of fun. We did some interesting stuff. But what's really cool is in the middle of the episode, we're joined by the creator of Artemis, a guy named Tom Robertson, and he was awesome on the phone. Actually, he Skyped in first. The Skype started flaking out, so we switched to a phone call in the middle. So if you hear the quality change, that's why. But don't worry, we also play some music. We actually have a few really funny things in here that you might like. So that's what's happening in this episode, and I hope you enjoy it. Next week, I'm going to be working at the NAMM show, so hopefully I'll get some time to do a podcast from the NAMM show, and if not, I'll do a recap one when I get back. So if you don't see a new episode up on Sunday, it's because I'm actually on a plane. So there's that, and I hope you enjoy episode 32 of Band Geek.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Band Geek Podcast. Its continuing mission to explore strange new music, to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We'll be right back.
bitches! Woo! Yeah! First take! Not!
Oh, Richie's drunk.
All right, he'll shut the cap.
Richie's
up.
Drunk?
Fuck you!
Richie smelled a cap of alcohol!
Who left the rubbing alcohol open on the counter?
Who?
Oh my god, Tony has film scoring at his disposal in front of him.
Wait, why does the snare drum keep playing when you stop?
I don't know, it's the orchestral set. So, everybody's good? Everybody's recording? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is going to be the best Band Geek episode ever.
Because it's Geeks in Space!
There's Muff peeking. Who cares?
Okay. I don't think I'm peeking.
Yeah, you know what? Lower the trim on Muff's channel.
Yeah.
Please.
That's just not right.
The trim?
Can you just lower the trim?
Okay, so this is... A very special Band Geek. It's sort of... It, shut up. I know they're all special.
This is a very special
Fuck off,
band
everybody.
Emphasis.
Give me more Mountain Dew.
You kept us waiting for
Emphasis
so
on
long.
Geek.
Richie had pizza, and now he's hyper.
It's the carbs.
No more pizza until you finish your cotton candy.
Until you finish the podcast. So, okay. On Sunday, we did the coolest fucking thing of all time.
Define cool.
Get ready, listeners.
I've played in front of 50,000 people, and this was better.
Combined.
Combined. Combined.
Oh, well done.
There we go. High five.
Hired. There was some self-help high fives.
Over the last 25 years, I've played in front of 50,000 people combined.
Did everybody miss me the past 5 weeks on the podcast?
Yes. Hey, Andy, turn up the heater. I'm dying over here. I'm dying over
here. You have so many demands tonight.
Okay. Thank you, honey.
He's all hyper.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. Hey,
no.
You.
Hey, no.
Can you just call Andy,
no.
Honey?
No. It's a good show. Listen. No.
This is what happens when he hangs out with Danny Miranda and Bobby Rondinelli for like a long time.
Okay, listen. But listen. On Sunday.
We're listening.
On Sunday.
Go ahead.
The greatest fucking thing happened. And oh. I'm Richie Castellano.
Green
here
Bay
with me
one.
Is. Hold on. I have to introduce everybody. And Andy Escalise is here with me. My co-host Jarrett Pressman's here with me.
Red Six standing by.
My wife Anne Marie Castellano's here
Red
with me.
Red October standing by.
Andy's wife Brandy Metaxas is here with us.
Simply Red standing by.
Oh! And once again, our returning champion is the incredible Tony Hansen.
What did he win that he's champion?
I'm back.
I'll tell you what he won. He won my heart forever on Sunday.
Oh.
And I want to talk about what happened on Sunday because it was life-changing. Life-changing.
Green Bay won, right?
I'm not aware of that, but yes. That's not part of my world.
Sports.
Okay. I've said on the show before that I am a big fan of the game Artemis. If you're unaware of that or don't know what the game is, you can go on YouTube and type in Artemis Bridge Simulator.
And you're not a nerd.
Clearly, you've never spent any time with Richie.
Yeah. Basically, anybody who's encountered me over the last 2 years knows what Artemis is because I talk about it nonstop. I think it's the greatest thing ever.
And we talked about it on the show. We played it on the road.
We did. Right. When we were on the road, Andy brought a router with him. And we played it in the hotel room at a gig at night, and it was one of the greatest things to do. Actually,
instead of doing a sound check,
no, instead of like going out and drinking, we just stayed in and drank. And we, the best part was Jimbo, who is a Fog Hat's production manager. He was comms, and he did it like the perfect voice. He was like, "Captain, we got an incoming transmission from the Krillian vessel. They say, die, never, never. They'll never surrender." And he would just had this awesome voice. But anyway, Artemis.
Shout out to Jim Mears.
Hey, Jim. go on YouTube, check out Artemis Bridge Simulator. Pause. Come back. We'll wait. Okay, good. Now that you've watched some YouTube videos on the Artemis Bridge Simulator, isn't that fucking cool? Right? You're like on Star Trek, and you're like doing different bridge
you're
missions.
You're on Star Trek.
You're on Star Trek. You're in Star Trek.
You're Star Trek.
So on so now on Sunday. Well, all right. Let me back up a little bit.
I don't know
Richie,
how
you... Richie, can you take a deep breath?
Wait, breathe in. No, that's a breath out. Breathe in.
There we go.
In with the good air.
Now do it sensually.
Okay.
See, you ruined it.
Breathe in.
All right, I'm sorry. I'm going to get...
You actually sound notably relaxed now.
I'm going to get my shit together here.
Wait. We have a song to relax you. Tony?
That was all me.
Quaid. Okay. Start the
Oh my God, people, stop.
People have shut this off already. So that you know what? Now that no one,
never give up. Never surrender.
You know what's great? Are our last hope. Now that no one's listening anymore, we can talk about whatever we want. We can talk about whatever we want. No one's listening anymore. So anyway.
Oh my God, what is going on?
On
There's
Sunday,
a lot of Galaxy Quest happening right now.
You
Not will, even Star Trek.
You will help us. Okay.
Let him get it out.
Seriously. Like Thermion,
seriously.
By
seriously.
The way.
Let him get it out. Let him get it out.
Okay. So, a couple years back, I found out about this game called Artemis, and I brought Tony in on it, and we played it, and we played it like addicts, and then we started telling other people about it. And it was a great game. Basically, at the core of the game, you walk around. You fly around a sector of space, and you shut up, Anne-Marie. What did I do?
I'm sorry. It's not you.
Okay. So
I ate a bunch of funny bread.
Sorry about that, guys.
Hey, bread.
Hey, Artemis.
We're gonna get into that. So
you fly around in space, Richie.
So you fly around in space and you defend these space stations from enemies. And, you know, there's a captain. And basically you link together six computers. And there's a captain, there's a helmsman, a weapons officer, a communications officer, an engineer, a science officer. Am I forgetting one?
Comms.
Captain.
Tactical.
Yeah, right.
And a captain.
So, you know, there... you take like a big screen and you project the main viewer of a spaceship, and you see space, and there's ships, and there's planets, and all these things you can explore and fly around. While you're doing that, the captain is barking out orders to everybody. You know, helm, take us to Mark 270, and weapons, load up two torpedoes, and comms, have the space station build us more nukes. So it's really cool. But Tony and I
saying it's cool doesn't make it cool.
No, it's cool. It's cool.
Totally cool.
Tony and I were playing this game, and we loved it so much. And when we love things, we try to kill them. So,
yeah, you do.
Love and this podcast.
So yeah. So yeah. Tony and I would call each other like 12-year-old girls at night, saying, "What can we do to add to Artemis?"
Richie tells
me
what time.
So sometimes I'm laying in bed, I'm trying to go to bed, I got work really early in the morning, and I hear Richie giggling from under the covers. He's giggling. He's like,
"Whoa."
That's so funny.
And I'm like, "Richie, who are you texting? It's like 11 o'clock at night. What is happening?" And he's like, "This is Artemis."
Richie.
Tony.
Richie was on the phone with me, and this was like the third time or fourth time we talked for like 40 minutes on the same day. And he's like, "Can you talk in an hour?" I'm like, "Yeah, okay." He's like, "I feel like we're having an affair."
14-year-old fucking boyfriend?
I feel like we're having an affair.
That's what he said, because I feel like we're having an affair. I was like, "It does feel like that. I'll call you in a little bit."
So
you hang up first. No, you. I miss you.
I miss the way you captain.
So we were...
That's the sound you make when Richie farts in bed.
We're at my uncle's 60th birthday party, his surprise birthday party, and someone made the mistake of putting Tony and I at a table together.
No.
And he said, "Next time we have a big Artemis game coming up, and I just don't want to do like the normal PvP thing again. What can we do? How can we like add to it?" I said, "You know what would be cool?" And he goes, "What?" I was like, "It would be cool if like there were places that we could run around and go do things and they impact the game." And he goes, "Yeah, that would be cool." Now, for those of you who don't know, Tony owns Phoenix Studios in Staten Island. It's a beautiful facility. There are multiple rooms there. It's a big place. And basically, when we play Artemis, Tony lets us have full run of the place, and we set up bridges in all of his different studios. So there are people with laptops on top of a, you know, $50,000 SSL console, or
more than that.
Way more. So, so anyway, we're sitting there at the party, and he's going, "Yeah, how could you do that?" And he goes, "Yeah, you know, it would be cool if you can have like away missions when you actually like fight each other." I'm like, "Yeah, that would be cool." And then everybody's like socializing, and him and I are on our phones. I'm looking up how to hack the game. He's looking up how to you know, what Nerf guns he wants to buy or laser tag guns.
We're working out the details.
God and, bless Amazon Prime.
Then yeah,
which is also my Transformer name.
And if anyone else is shopping on Amazon, please go
to podcast.com/bandgeek
and use the Amazon link.
Hey, Anthony, do you want to see us just how to ride on that Segway?
That was great. That was great. I'm impressed.
That was well done.
So we kept talking, and I went on the forums, the Artemis forums, because there are forums for the game, and I'm on them. And there's this guy who I posted basically the idea Tony and I had, like, how can we make things that are happening in the room in the real world impact the game? And this guy whose handle is Aru, A-R-R-E-W.
Aru.
He said...
That's why you love him.
Yeah. He Aru. Said, "Oh, you know, I just made a sandbox script that will do exactly that." And so I showed it to Tony. We actually had a meet over it. We had to have a meeting where we looked at it, mm-hmm. and he was like, "What? What? You could do this? You could do
was
that?
Was it a nerd's moot?"
It was. And... as soon as Tony realized that he could play Artemis in the same way he plays Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
Now, if you listen to the Dungeons and Dragons episode where we did
the sound of Tony's head exploding.
Yeah, we've played Dungeons and Dragons on the show before, but Tony realized that he could run Artemis in the same way he runs a D&D game. The light bulb went off, and he goes, "Oh my God, this changes everything." So, what happened on Sunday was the result of 2 months of obsession for me and Tony. And I'm going to let Tony take over here. So, Tony, explain what happened on Sunday. Go.
Family, work, obstacles.
So I woke up with this pain in my balls. So on Sunday, we did something quite revolutionary. We combined Artemis with a dirty word. What is that word, Richie?
LARP.
Think yes. It's doing it by itself.
That's right. You want to score this?
No, don't ever ask him that question.
On the realm of Phoenix Studios yesterday, on Sunday, we went somewhere where no one has gone before.
This is too lighthearted.
That's terrible.
So we set up three bridges of Artemis. So basically it's about 6 to 7 people in 3 different rooms. And we also, besides the bridges, we set up 2 event areas. One event area was the engineering bay, where Richie built a fantastic warp core, which you can see online. That glows with DMX lighter. The warp core. When he came to the studio, he was like, "Okay, guys, I'm going to set up the warp core." I'm like, "Did you ever believe you'd ever say that in your life?" It's so fun being a nerd. And anyway, so then we had the live room we have, which you could see. If you went to Phoenix Studios' website, you could see actually what we did, fenixstudios.com. And the live room, which is like a big, large wooden room we have, we set that up as being the event area for the away missions. So... we went through a whole big story. As the game master, I had a ruse game sandbox, and I'm able to move the ships where I like. I can affect the whole game. I can control everything. And we also hooked up video chat. So, like a regular Star Trek mission where they encounter aliens, life forms, that's various things, they would periodically encounter me 100 times over and over in different ways.
But he was wearing masks, and he had voice-changing effects.
Yes.
And he was talking in alien languages. It was fucking bananas. Yep. It was bananas.
Richie ceased making noise for like 2 minutes straight because he was laughing so hard. He was so thrilled that the sound out of Richie was this.
Okay, you're not...
So what were you? You were Richie. Admiral that
the
ran...
first I was Admiral Hansen, just my last name. But I had an eye patch. A scar on my other eye.
Your eye got really better in the
I did. I lost my eye patch, so my eye got better from being victorious the whole time. And
the healing rings around this planet have healed my eye.
Yes.
And then he decided to shave his beard.
And then I had a Geico caveman mask, which made me look like a grinning caveman.
That was a scary mask.
It made you look like an extra in Big Trouble in Little China.
Hold on. I gotta step in here. Okay. You're doing a good job explaining it, but it's one thing you're missing. We were in fucking Star Trek. It was amazing. It was amazing. Basically, everybody got on their bridges, and like normally, we normally play Artemis, and the screens pop up, and it's awesome, and we love it. But this time, like, we'll be playing, and all of a sudden, a screen would pop up, and there would be Tony in a costume saying, "This is the Admiral. Everybody meet at these coordinates." I'm like, "Oh shit, the Admiral just called us." So let's
like a
these
giant view screen in the middle of the room, just like Star Trek.
It was amazing. So I was like, "Okay," and I'm the captain, and I go, "Science, where you know, plot a course to sector B4." And Amory would science officer, she'd go, "Helm, go to bearing 280. You know what I mean? And the helm would lock it in, sir. I'm like, "Warp one, engage." And I was I just said engage like the show. And I was freaking out. So
that's what was going on in your ship.
I feel like
me and Andy's ship was like, yeah, go there. Go where he said.
Yeah, our ship wasn't that.
You weren't role playing the right way. But
no,
you
were
on
the
fun ship.
Yes, we were.
Yes, we were.
We were on the
they went to planets, and they actually, when they would get to the planet, they would actually have an away team.
Right, we'd have to land on the fucking planet.
So they would walk over, and they would go into the live room, but lo and behold, there are evil aliens waiting on the planet in a room full of pure fog. Nothing but fog.
Right, he smoked out his big live room.
It was, and I don't think you guys actually grasp how little you could see in that room, because when he's like, "Oh, it was so foggy." No. You could see nothing.
It was foggy
at all.
And the lights
there were lights
low
on the floor that you couldn't
see. And they
were
red.
I refed one point. So we had some refs in the room because we had Nerf guns. So we're all firing Nerf guns, and if someone gets shot, they would say, "I'm wounded," and then they have to go out the event area and then be out of that segment. So I'm behind everybody. I'm actually behind Richie and Amory, and they're both going in like SEAL 6 team, you know, going in slowly, looking into the room, and they're walking in slow, and you can't see shit. I barely see them. They're 2 feet away. They're walking into fog and disappearing like Batman. And Raphael comes behind you, and he's like squatting down, using you guys as like
meat shields.
He's like going in like this, like underneath, and then he disappears. And I'm like, this is incredible. This is
but in his live room, Tony has multicolored lighting in the ceiling,
LED lights,
and lights built into the floor, and it was incredible. And he had, when he said he had evil people, there was a whole team of people,
my girlfriend,
that just worked for Tony, wearing costumes, like wearing hoods and stuff, and masks, and they were fighting us with
like
Nerf.
Being in an Olivia Newton-John video.
Fog is the word.
So
let's get.
But that wasn't it. That wasn't all of it. Something like things would happen. We're like, okay, your engine. I mean, I know the other ships did this, but your engine is leaking coolant or something. Get down there and fix it. So the crew would have to go to the engineering team, the room that I built. Now, let me paint this picture for you. On Star Trek, the warp core is a giant tube that runs through the length of the ship. It's gigantic. It pulses. It hums. Mm-hmm. And it's a whole room. The whole room is dedicated to maintaining this giant, you know, energy source. So I told Tony, we need a warp core. And he's like, how the fuck are you going to build a warp core? I said, okay. And I went on Amazon, and for $13, I found a children's play tunnel. and I'm looking at this, and Amory's like, what are you buying? I was like, I'm buying a tunnel for Artemis.
He does the creepiest stuff. It's like he's like researching children's play tunnels and Nerf guns.
Richie's inspired by browsing history on Amazon is the stuff that the FBI uses as evidence.
So Amory's like, you better not be spending a lot of money on a fucking kid's tunnel. I'm like, it's on sale for $12. She's like, okay, fine. So
you should
and
have
he
seen
bought
my
it. It was for real.
You should have seen my staff at the studio, like, because we get amps in, we get all different kinds of parts in, and then they're opening it up, and it's like kids spy gear. Okay, kids Nerf gun. Okay. You know, like seeing all the stuff that we have there in the tech room, and it was just, I'd explain everything to everybody.
It looked like one of those collapsible clothes hampers. That's
what it Yeah.
Well,
but
it had
like a big swirly thing in the middle, so it legit looked like a warp core.
Yeah.
It did.
Well, we suspended it vertically, which, you know, when you put a tunnel down, you do it horizontally, but we suspended it, and we threw two DMX lights in it, a smoke machine around it, and we found a way to control the lights with a computer. So they would do these different effects, and
through your iPad,
and controlled by a Star Trek LCARS display from my iPad.
What
and
does LCARS stand for?
Library, computer access.
retrieval system.
Basically, that's exactly what it looks like on Star Trek Next Generation with their panels they have. It looks exactly to the T like that. And Richie was able to control the DMX lighting just by pressing the button.
And sound.
And sound.
So it was like, whoop, whoop, whoop. So we had that in another game.
Sounded like a pride parade.
Yeah.
Terrible.
So people would run into there and they'd have to fix stuff. And like we'd set up the warp core to like melt down and like fix the warp core and have to hit all the buttons. It was amazing. And the thing that blew my mind that I didn't know you were going to do is in the middle of the game, we sent our teams on an away mission. They fought each other. And then they come back victorious and they have an alien ambassador. I was like, that's like the show. That happens every week. I'm like, Tony, you're so smart. You're so brilliant. I'm like, that's it. And I'm like, and here's me. I'm like so floored that there's an alien ambassador on my bridge, on my ship, even though it's clearly my cousin with an alien mask on, wearing his jeans and his sneakers.
And a Jedi robe.
It's Phil, every ninja, every alien.
Yeah, making no attempt to do a voice, right?
Oh,
hello, I'm not Phil. You know, I'm... So, but he comes in, and I'm like, and
Richie's staring all doe-eyed at him.
I'm doe-eyed, and I go, and after I snap out of it, I go... Welcome to our ship, Ambassador. I'm Captain Richard. You know what I mean? And he sits down and we're showing him the ship and everything like that.
Meanwhile, in the other two ships, Damien gets his crew to frisk the alien first.
After I told people, do not touch each other, and they're like, frisk, 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 frisk.
And as soon as the alien walked into my bridge, I told all my team to aim their weapon at the alien.
No, we had our weapons waimed. We had our weapons.
We had our weapons waimed at him.
Kill the weapon.
I was like,
we had our weapons aimed at him, like, secretly.
Keep your eye
but
on Richie this
But Richie was
thing.
In love.
I was
we
like,
offer them
this
snacks.
This happens in Star Trek every week. Like, they bring it. Oh, Ambassador, we're here to negotiate a peace treaty, right? You know, it's like something Picard does. Yep. So I'm like, this is so awesome. Like, we have an observer, an alien observer, and then some bad guy comes on the screen. It's Tony with like a gas mask on, and
Bane mask.
And he used like a voice changer, and he's like,
Man.
And his voice is like half an octave lower. And he was going, ha, 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 and whatever, I can't remember what you said, but you gave, like, the kill sign, and then Phil pulls out a fucking Nerf gun and shoots me in the back. So what do? I shatter the shit out of that. I go, and I fall dead on the ground.
Phil was good about it, because he faked us out. He gave the kill sign, and then we're all watching, like, we all have, like, the guns, but nobody's shooting. We're like, what?
Your ship had the reaction I hoped for, because Anne-Marie is watching it, which you can see on video, by the way. You should post the video.
Yeah.
And Anne-Marie's watching it, and you're all there, and then I do this. I do like the kill sign.
Across the throat.
And then Amory's like, "What's that?" Everybody's like, "What's that?" And Amory's like, "Looks like he gave a signal to somebody."
And then Phil's like, "Oh, whoa! No!" Phil played it. And then we all look at Phil or whatever ambassador or whatever the hell he was, and we're like, he's like, "Oh, they must have been planning this all along." Waits for Richie to turn around.
The best thing, the most fun thing I have a lot of great moments, like the one walking into the fog. But one of the other ones is when I'm sitting in my Game Master station, I can see every bridge, of course, so through Skype. So I see bridge one, two, three right there. And all the bridges, I see these ridiculous aliens just standing there, obviously with no expression because it's a mask. They're all just standing there by everybody else. And people are looking at them like they don't know what's going on. It's so weird. And then all of a sudden, I give the kill sign, or they all turn around. And I just see everyone, I see darts flying every different direction. And I'm like, this is exactly what I want. It's great.
Margarita was great because she turned around very...
Margarita is Tony's girlfriend.
She turned around. She turned around very gently. Like, very, like, daintily. And we all shot her all at the same time.
Poor Margarita. She got shot so many times.
I think she got shot before she even got on the bridge.
Just so you know, here's the DM, the GM plan when I did it.
No, I'm sorry.
Richie, I got it.
So what I did, I told him, I said, listen, so what you're going to do is you're going to pump the gun before you go in there because they're all going to be watching like a hawk. No one's going to trust you. Oh, actually, I have to talk about a whole funny topic that this brings up. And because pump the gun when you're inside, which is it's a pump Nerf gun. So they pump the gun, they're hiding it in these Jedi robes, Star Wars robes, catered by Richie Castellano, of course. And so they go into the rooms, they have the guns pumped, and I tell them, I go, when I do the kill sign, you're gonna put the gun right to the back to the captain. So this is an obvious kill. There's no way you can mess that up. You just kill it. So when Margarita comes back, everybody comes back, it's like, Phil was like, yeah, I killed Richie.
Yeah.
I killed you. And then whoever kills, you know, the people, and Margo's like, no, I didn't kill anybody. I'm like, what happened? Like, I'm like, you had surprise. So now I know he turned around, everyone just shot her, and it was just done.
She turned around so daintily, and everybody shot her. But then the cutest thing was that she like, died, and she kind of just, like, she was like, oh, I'm going to lay down now. And laid down on the floor, and then for 30 seconds, and then got up, and she was like, okay, bye, guys.
She did great.
It was adorable.
She put on this, like, this crazy...
That mask was crazy.
Yeah, with the wig.
Wig.
Oh, I can't think of his name.
Slash?
No. Oh, it did look like a slash.
Oh, like Predator or something.
I was going to say something different.
Like Howard Stern?
Good golly, Miss Molly. What's his name?
What?
Good golly, Miss Molly.
Little Richard?
Yeah. It's like a Little Richard mask with an alien on it.
They all have the same hair.
Yeah. All the same people. Now, I want to bring one more thing up. This made me realize something because taking it back to when we had a couple missions, people were fighting. And then I had a mission where they went down the surface and every ship parked at the station in the game. So which means that every ship had three people or more go down. So everyone was ready for a battle and they all walk in. There are 12 people in this live room staring at three people in alien masks. And they all got their guns up and they're all looking at them. And I'm looking out my little window. I'm sneaking in and I'm like, oh my God. They're supposed to get on the ships and this is like the weirdest thing ever. And through this and other things, I realized that everyone was racist towards aliens. These people are, remember, we're in the game. I go, they're like, we are ambassadors. Everyone's like, yeah, bring him in. Put a gun to his face. You know, frisk him. Frisk him again. No, again. Everybody was, no one trusted. If an alien walked in the room, they were like up his ass with a gun. When, just so you know, Tom, he was playing with us.
We'll get to Tom later.
Tom went into the engineering bay, one of the people that played with us. And he goes to the engineering bay. The mission is go down to the engineering bay and fix something. So Phil is there dressed as an alien. Phil goes, oh, hello. He goes, boom, and he waves the alien. I'm like, everyone is fucking racist.
Wait. He's part of your crew.
We're not ready for this. No one's ready for aliens yet.
It's the Will Smith approach to aliens. It's welcome to Earth.
When we went on that mission, it was me and Spo, and... Spo called you.
He
and
texted
said,
me.
He's Am like, I supposed to kill Phil?
Right. I'm like, I don't know.
But one of my favorite, the core gameplay was amazing. I mean, the story was pretty straightforward. Get to the enemy territory, kill them, and you win. But
it was a lot of other stuff, too.
No, the little shit is what got me.
Yeah.
Like, the thing I'll never, ever forget about Sunday was
it
Tony
was
had
two
a,
days ago? You can't
Tony.
Say that.
Tony
you
has no. This is that. Tony had an alien mask on, and he's going, "We are ambassadors. We need your help." And then all of a sudden, Phil, my cousin, walks into the frame because Tony's on Skype talking to us. So walks into the frame, and Tony turns his head towards Phil wearing the same alien mask, and they go, and then they tell me, "Yes, we need you to hurry up to the planet at the following coordinates." and they keep looking back and forth at each other, talking. And I'm like, "Holy shit!" At that point, I was like, "I'm in Star Trek," but I was laughing so hard. I took my camera out, and I'm like, "I'm sorry, Ambassador, I didn't get that last part." He goes, "Is it again for me?" But then there were some weird things that also happened. That we weren't anticipating. We really wanted to have laser tag for the away missions.
Before we talk about that, I want to also talk about some of the little stuff that Tony was able to manipulate in the game.
Okay.
That was very cool that at one point we had to get to like a jump thing or something.
Like a wormhole.
A wormhole or jump something. And we were all going there, and then my ship went away to pick up an anomaly to get some more energy. Yeah. And everyone's like, the gate's closing. You gotta hurry up. And yeah, that stuff was fun. And
you wrote in stuff where, like, if we decided to do something else, like, you were able to adjust for that. So, like, yep. When we were trying to get to that gate, and it was like, it's closing. Like, if we didn't make the gate, we would have had to, like, find out another way to get to
Well, we didn't make the
location.
Gate.
Did we not make the gate?
Nobody made the gate.
Two of us didn't make the gate, I think.
Well,
some of us were out shopping for an anomaly.
Also, don't forget that one time we had aliens board a ship, and the aliens took out everybody on the ship with Nerf guns. And the whole ship
Except
actually was destroyed.
If you're,
I'm sorry, Anne-Marie. Is that when you shot me in the face?
That's exactly when I shot you.
When I was trying to help your ship.
We sent you an emissary.
We said there was no beaming at the onset of this. When I saw you show up on my ship, I thought you were a Borg.
She thought you were the Swedish chef. It sounds like Borg.
Anyway, going back to what I was saying.
More importantly,
that's the captain.
Was you had us do a mission where we had to go for collect supplies from one ship to another, and we went one way, and then we turned around to go back, and all of a sudden you put like 30 black holes in the middle of our way.
That was hilarious.
Well, I'll tell you something else that I did. I don't know if you realize this, but when you guys were fighting that mission, there's a supply ship at the top of the map. There were bad guys, and then you guys went there, and no one realized that the bad guys are starting to go towards the supply ship, and they actually destroyed the supply ship.
Oh, yeah. No, we noticed that. We all noticed that.
And that's why I just
punched in
quietly sneaked it back in. Oh, look. And so I think you said, actually, it went, oh, another supply ship just walked in. Right, right.
Yeah, we fucked up. We were supposed to
guys, I'm sitting there at the science station. I'm like, what am I, freaking just sitting here to look pretty? I'm like, guys, we got to get to the supply ship. They're like, we're just going to fight these guys. I'm like, you don't get it. There's a timer. We have to get there.
They're all like moving close to it. And I'm like, okay, there it goes.
We were all saying that.
There's another one.
Was there a point, too, where you had like 30 enemy ships like uncloak? Was there another?
Yeah, there's like 12 points.
I had a lot of them cloak in. That was great. Jump over.
It's like, oh no!
I even manually jumped them. When you see them coming in like this, I'm like,
that was ridiculous.
He's making switchboard operator hands for people who can't see.
But the best thing was when Tony actually joined us. He was like, oh, I'm joining the fleet, and then 30,000 ships.
That was epic at the end.
What happened is, we jumped into this sector, which literally every single
bad guy
checker on the board was not one bad guy, squadrons of bad guys.
It was end game evil boss.
It was like, it was like all the fire and hell fury that you can muster. And then we're like, there's no way we're going to do this.
That's where the 30 black holes were in his mouth.
Yeah, right in the middle of that.
I just want to point something out, though. This took us a full day to set up.
Yeah. At least
24, it's like 24 hours to set up probably. And you know, all these things could have gone wrong, and there were a lot of technical hiccups, but I think I'm going to kiss your ass right now, Tony. I think this just speaks to how good of a game master you are, cuz you kept all these things in line. Have you ever DM'd 25 people?
When I was 13 or 14 years old,
I don't like
when
I
was
the
already,
story's
I was
going.
Already DMing for a couple of years. We used to have a lot of us, and people started, you know, hearing about what I was playing, so get more and more. So the most I ever DM'd at once was 13, which is a lot, because it's 13 people who are all staring at you.
Yeah.
And you got to keep them all busy, and you're jumping back and forth. So I feel like that prepared me for this, but it was a lot of work. I had to make sure everyone had a job. Like, I had a list, you know, of this ship is doing this, and then if this goes wrong, they could do this to here. And then I can't tell you how much I had to improvise because people were fucking up the story left and right. Tom went over and he shot a guy that had so much information for you. The guy was, and Phil was like, hello. And he's like, bang. And I'm like, okay. And Phil's like, what do I do? And I'm like, you die. And I put the mask on and I'm like, I am Lieutenant Levin. Blah, 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 blah. You must come to the plan.
So, but I just, I was watching this. I'm like, how the hell is he keeping track of all this? And you did. And so it was amazing. So I really do applaud you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
On that. But I have a surprise right now.
Are we being hailed by somebody, Richie?
Yes, I do. Right now, we're going to take a Skype call from the maker.
Incoming transmission.
The maker. Oh, this oil battle feels so good.
Whenever we play Artemis, we always see created by Tom Robertson, and we thought it was Thom for a long time because he spells it with an H. But it's Tom, and I actually, just on a whim, I contacted the Artemis website saying that we had this podcast. We'd love to talk to him.
You were on a high from Sunday.
I was like, all I could do was think and talk about Artemis.
We're all still on high.
It's ridiculous. So,
and as you can see, Band Geek fans, we haven't played a single song yet.
Yes, we have. We played Star Trek.
On Kazoo. Yeah.
That's okay. Our instrument. That's our hashtag.
That's like our thing.
But right now we're going to take a call from Tom Robertson, who is the guy who's the sole creator of this game that we love so much.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Awesome.
So, here we go. Let's connect to Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Richie. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm going to resituate you really quick so you can see everybody.
I'm fine.
Okay, first of all, before we even start, I just want to tell you we're all
huge fans of your game, and we're very, very excited to be speaking with you right now. Cool. So thank you. Yeah, thank you for calling in to talk to us. This is awesome. I'm nervous. This is crazy.
You're the rock star.
Yeah. We're here with Tom Robertson. Can I call you Tom?
Sure, absolutely.
Tom is a video game designer and programmer who just so happened to have created my favorite game ever, and the official game of the Band Geeks here.
Yep.
And it's our it's our favorite game, and we've gotten all of our friends into it, and it's a group of people spanning the ages and spanning interests too. Like, not everybody who plays the game is a sci-fi fan, but everybody who plays the game loves it. So this, so thank you for joining our show, Tom, and we love your game. So,
well, thank you for letting me call into your great show.
My first question is, when did you get into game design?
Well, in the short answer is all my life. I was touching a computer and programming and making games since I was about 13. And, you know, this is a long time ago, back in the Commodore VIC 20 days, that kind of thing. And I've never stopped. That's just been my passion my whole life.
So what was your first games like?
Well, I mean, you know, you set the Wayback Machine all the way to the back, and you get text adventures and, you know, simple simulations. My very first computer was not actually a computer. It was my father brought home a terminal from work that I could use on the weekends. But this terminal was had a thermal paper roll. It didn't actually have a monitor. It just had a printout.
Wow.
And it also had these cups on the back, so you could take the phone off the wall and stick the physical handset of the phone into the back of the terminal so that it could contact the mainframe.
So it wasn't actually your computer. It was your dad's job's computer.
Exactly.
And you were playing games on it.
I was making games on it. There were not any games, so I had to make my own.
Wow. Have you worked for one of the major developers doing game design?
Yeah, well, game design, you know, when I was working in the video game industry as a whole, I was mostly employed as a coder.
Okay.
I worked at Acclaim. I worked at Interplay. I worked at MicroProse. I worked at several big shops as well as several small shops. My first real industry job was 1992, and my last one was 2003.
Wow. Are there any games that you might be able to name that you worked on that maybe are popular that we've heard of?
Sure. First off, in the video game industry as a whole, there's a whole lot of canceled projects. You know, when you work in the video game industry, there's about a 2/3 chance that the project you're on will ever see the light of day for whatever reason. But of the games that actually shipped and came out, I worked on first a naval simulator called Harpoon and Harpoon 2. And then a little later, I worked on Barbie Fashion Designer.
I love that game.
A lot of people did. They paid a whole lot of money for James Cameron. And then later, I didn't actually work on it, but I provided some tools and basically palled around with the guys who did some of the Fallout games.
Oh, wow.
Because I was in the same building working on another project. Then I went over and worked with Acclaim on All-Star Baseball 2002 and 2003.
Nice.
My last industry job, I was doing a port of The Sims to the PlayStation 2.
All right. So what made you decide to go out on your own and make your own games?
Well, I've always worked on my own games, even on nights and weekends when I was gainfully employed. So it's just, you ask why you make music.
Right. Well, you know, I'm doing this on my nights and weekends, so I understand exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Okay, so I want to get into the reason we're contacting you is our favorite game, Artemis. It's such a simple, elegant idea that nobody's done before.
Yeah.
So
it is strange, isn't it?
It's so funny because, by the way, this is my friend Tony, and he is
the... Hello, Tony.
How you doing? Nice to meet you.
He's our game master. So, mm-hmm. And because we play tabletop games, role-playing games, Dungeons & Dragons. We've played Star Wars role-playing games, all sorts of different things. And we'd always, you know, every time we'd get together and we'd play games, after the game we'd say, why doesn't anyone just make a Star Trek game where you could be different bridge positions? And then the Star Trek Online mm-hmm. game came out.
And we thought that's...
And we thought, oh, duh, you're going to be multiple people on a spaceship, and you could control, like, one guy can be the helm, one guy can be weapons, yeah. blah, blah, blah. So the game came out, we all bought it at opening day, and it was nothing like that. The bridge was decorative.
Yeah.
And we were just so disappointed.
You were able to stand together on the bridge, but it didn't mean anything.
Right, right.
Well, I actually have the backstory of that.
Oh, please do tell.
But I think your larger point was about, you know, why has no one ever made the game of this kind before? And I think that as soon as I made it, I got a few people telling me about other games that had done it before, but they were very small and had done it in various ways. There was an old 1980s submarine game that had the same kind of difference of bridge stations.
Right.
But mostly what I got were people saying, I had the idea too.
Yeah, but you didn't do it. So,
yeah.
Now, when you have this idea, and you're a game designer. Now, a lot of us are computer illiterate here, but we love games. So what's the first step when you have this great idea for a game? What do you have to do first?
Well, yeah, you're asking an art question as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. You know, we are artists. We just happen to use different mediums and different tool sets. But, you know, when it comes to an art question like that, I actually teach video game development here in Cleveland.
Wow.
At a small community college, just a, you know, a few classes in game development that they had me do. And I tell all my students the same thing, you know, it's art. No matter what medium you're talking about, it's art. And so there is so much we can learn from each other and from the way different artists in different mediums attack these problems. So, I mean, you have deconstructive techniques for when you're in the shower and you get an idea for something. You're like, hot damn, I can't wait to lay down the first track on that.
Right.
You know, so.
So, but I mean, technically speaking, I mean, I understand the analogy, because for me, if I have an idea for a song, what I might do is I'll put down a quick guitar track and I'll sing over it, and then later on I'll put drums in and stuff like that. So technically speaking, what's the first thing you have to do as a game designer? Like, what's the groundwork that you lay?
Well, you know, aside from setting up a blank project, basically, to you know, get started and pull in some of the needed technology.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually really good at rapid prototyping. So I have a lot of tools ready to go, and I have a lot of kind of pre-baked, you know, easy to put in art that I can throw in just so I can get something going. So I'm really good at quickly putting together something small that proves a point. But just like any musician, you know, actually different bands have completely different ways of being creative.
Right.
And so it is with video game developers. You know, what I do is not necessarily what all video game developers do to make games, especially when you're talking about a large team and a large company. There's a lot more of, you know, writing scripts and writing pitch docs and, you know, producing, you know, really kind of creative and descriptive material before anybody gets started working on the actual functionality. Mm. So, you know, you look at a lot of these AAA games, they have so much voice acting in them.
Mm-hmm.
And as you well know, that requires a script that has to be locked down very early. And the script itself then defines not just the voice acting, but, you know, how the flow of the game itself goes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like to do games that way because that really restricts me.
Okay, makes sense. So this game, is this something you did? From what I've heard, this is something you did completely on your own. Is that correct?
Yeah, but again, I've been making games my whole life, and I have a lot of tools, and I know what I'm doing.
Right.
So
even though it's
by yourself. This is based on all the techniques and tools you've developed already, and this is just a bringing all those things together.
Yeah, and especially in the case of Artemis, I already had 3D spaceships. I already had the network layer. There were many pieces ready to go.
Right. Okay, so I want to ask about – here's another interesting question I have. Because just going back to what Tony and I were talking about, it's like, why doesn't a Star Trek game have this? And before I even go into this, I remember reading a review of Artemis, and the you've probably seen this. The first line of the review said, I want to get one thing clear. Artemis is not a Star Trek game. It has nothing to do with Star Trek. It's not licensed by Star Trek. It has nothing to do with Star Trek. With that said, Artemis is the best Star Trek game you will ever play, period. So, Now I know the game is available on Steam now and also on, you know, Android and on iTunes. If one of the companies like, say, Paramount or whoever's making the Star Trek game contacted you and said, we want to add your functionality or as a layer to our game, would you be open to something like that?
Well, sure. You know, you guys know of Minecraft and Notch and the whole thing there?
Oh, yeah.
How he, you know, he had a fuck you price. And Microsoft met it.
Nice.
Yeah, well, my wife and I, we're constantly talking about my fuck you price. but there's absolutely no way anyone's ever going to give me that money. So, you know, as far as Paramount goes, yeah, theoretically that's possible, and I'd be willing to talk with them if it happened. But I was working at Interplay back, you know, mid-90s. And I was the lead programmer on a canceled project called Star Trek Secret of Vulcan Fury.
Okay.
And so even though I never personally took meetings with anybody from Paramount or these other Hollywood companies, I certainly worked with people who did. And they all said the same thing. Man, Paramount is a bunch of litigious bastards.
So
from the beginning, I never wanted to have anything to do with them.
Right. But, you know, it's so funny that even without using any of their intellectual property, you captured the spirit perfectly. It's not about, like, this is a Klingon, this is a Vulcan, this is a galaxy-class starship. It's none of that. It's about, this is the feeling. It's like you and what art is supposed to do is convey a feeling. And that's really drives home your point about video game designers being artists, because even though, you know, we don't have Leonard Nimoy doing a really fancy voiceover in your game, and we don't have, you know, all the things that, you know, are associated with Star Trek, we get the same feeling we get when we're watching an exciting episode or an exciting movie. And also, you know, even if you're not a Star Trek fan and you know nothing about it, you still get the feeling, and it's a way for us, you know, sci-fi fans to share that feeling with people who have nothing to do with sci-fi.
You feel like you're exploring.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you nailed it. And
thank you.
And I think they can't sue you for it. So you can't copyright a feeling,
well,
right?
I actually have tried very hard to stay away from all the copyrightable material and not get sued.
Right.
In fact, I was talking with a lawyer, a colleague of my wife, who agreed to represent me if I went ahead and used the word phaser.
Do they have a copyright on that?
My wife asked if they have a copyright on
that. Sorry, I'm in the corner. You can't see me, but maybe you can hear me.
I'll move you so you can see the rest of the people here.
Hi, we exist back here. So
I go ahead.
No, I was just curious. Do they have a copyright on the actual word or idea phaser?
Actually, I believe they do.
Wow.
But more than that, even if you don't have a copyright on a specific word or phrase or representation, a lawyer can make a case based on a kind of a penumbra of representations or similarities.
Yep.
You know, you have to be careful.
Of course.
I saw recently on Facebook you posted a link to another game coming out that has a similar sort of multiple bridge position experience, and I thought it was really cool because you said, "Oh, someone else is doing a multiple station game, and more power to them." So so obviously I think it's very cool, and I just wanted to remark on that how you're not really like guarding your idea. It's like, oh, if someone else wants to do this, great. But I think it takes like a certain amount of confidence because you know your game is awesome and you have this great community of players.
Well, I'm confident because of fans like you.
My favorite kinds of games are multiplayer co-op games. I've never been good at first-person shooters. I don't like real-time strategy. I like role-playing games, but the only thing I don't like about role-playing games is I have to play them by myself. Mm-hmm. So I think I was just doing a search for like multiplayer co-op, because I often do that, and I saw this. And I watched some YouTube videos, and I sent it to my friend Tony over here, and he went, "Holy shit, someone did it. They did the thing we were talking about." So we immediately played it, and we were like drug addicts the first...
That was a day everything changed.
Yeah. This is before This is before I had a day job, and I used to... We would go... Tony owns a recording studio, and we would go there with... us and three other guys, and we'd set up a giant projector and play this until like 4 a.m. every day. Yeah. And just and then we would go home and talk to each other on the phone about it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, maybe next time we should use the nuke instead of the homing, you know. It was crazy, and it's like I'd close my eyes and see the game. So yeah, I'm hardcore, man. But the awesome. But then I started running into like issues. I'm like, I wonder if I can do this, or how do I, you know, I see in the directory there's a DMX commands XML file. What's that? So I looked on the website and I saw it was a forum, and then I saw people that were really into it, and I said, wow, this is amazing. There's a whole community of people. Now, have you visited any of the bridges that people have built?
Yeah, a couple. Certainly not some of the most fantastic ones, but that's always been very exciting to me, seeing how much people have really invested in their bridges and how much they've wanted to take my game. And well, here's the deal. Ever since I made the game, I said to myself, there's a guy who's already got a Star Trek bridge in his in his basement or in his garage, and it's just waiting for my software. This must be the case. Absolutely. As soon as I release it, this guy's going to call me up and say, of course, you've completed my life's journey. Right?
Absolutely.
I never got that call. Oh. As far as I could have sworn that there were people out there who had built their bridges and built their stuff, and then they would be overjoyed. But instead, what I got were people saying, your game has inspired me to build a bridge.
Uh-huh.
And of that, there's a great deal. There's lots of people having lots of fun building their own setups and getting their own crews together.
So you gave them the reason to finally build the bridge. That's what
maybe so. Maybe I pushed them over the line to really confront their wives about it.
Yep.
Well, I think unlike a lot of other, let's face it, you know, nerdy mediums, Artemis is the most wife-friendly. Because it really is like, unlike other games where I'm hunched over a computer and it's all about me, this is a game that brings people together. And even when we started playing the game, we said, oh, what if we could play this online? And then Tony said, no, I don't want to play this online. We got to be in the room together yelling at each other.
Every time we talk with friends, like, oh, want to play some games tonight? They're like, yeah. Okay, so I'll go home and I'll call you up. And I'm like, no, let's get in the same room. And let's play a game that's together.
Well, there's fewer and fewer games that allow you to do that now. Everything wants to be online.
Exactly, because they want everyone to own a copy of the game. Everyone has to buy it, and then they all go home.
Mo money.
Well, that's another thing. You have a really, in the age of really harsh digital rights management, you have a very relaxed copy protection on the game. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about your reasons for doing that?
Sure, absolutely. It's not a really big deal. I've been selling games on the internet for quite a long time. I think I sold my first one in 1997.
Wow.
And of all the people that I respect and respected who sell software online, at least games, they all say the same thing. The time and energy you put into trying to keep people from pirating your software is time and energy you aren't putting into making your game cool.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Now, another thing about your game, and I, especially with your game, and especially after I've been looking on the forums, is there's a whole modding community. Now, how does that make you feel? That's gotta be cool.
Oh, absolutely. And I can't, it's, from a mercenary point of view, it's just really wonderful to make a product and then let your fans finish it for you. But I actually am very flattered, and I think I always thought from the beginning that, you know, people making Star Trek mods or you know, Battlestar Galactica mods, that kind of thing, would be an inevitability. So I just met them halfway, and they exist.
Right. Do you have specific questions you want to ask him?
Yeah.
Go for it.
So I would love to know, are you still I know you've updated the game once already, I think when it went to Steam. And mm-hmm. I'm curious, the first thing I would like to ask is, are you always actively working on the game?
Or well, more or less. I mean, you know, like any artist, there's plenty of things that I want to do and plenty of little projects here and there that I do, you know, but I am, generally speaking, continuing to work on Artemis all the time.
And which brings to the next question, which I'm dying to know, is what do you have in store for a future version of the game?
Okay, well, yay, I'm glad this is a very long podcast. Well, let me start by talking about something that's not software related, but it's very cool. I'm going to have an actual convention for Artemis.
I saw that.
It's going to be April 10th through 12th here in Cleveland. We're just got the ballroom of the DoubleTree Hilton, and we're going to try and get 20 bridges.
Wow.
Wow, that's great.
Mm-hmm. So you guys are, of course, invited.
I wish I could go.
It's about an 8-hour trip.
Now, does this tie into the war server? Is that what I saw?
We'll be definitely running the war server.
Okay.
But you know what? I released the war server over Christmas.
Okay.
So, and that's, feedback is still trickling in, and I'm still trying to figure out ways to help people use the war server, and which is really a cool idea for trying to get more people to play relatively together.
Well, to our listeners who don't know what a war server is, can you explain that really quickly?
Well, sure. So you know that with my game, you can put 6 computers together and have a bridge.
Right.
And battle in a sector and, you know, defend your bases. Well, the war server is another piece of software which you run on another computer, and it models an entire galactic war.
Wow.
With multiple sectors. And then you and your bridge can log on to that other game, to that war server, and find a sector to co-help out with the war and go battle in that sector.
It's kind of MMO PvP type thing, right?
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, well, definitely MMO in the larger sense that hopefully lots of people will be playing together, working together to defeat, to win the war.
Okay. That's awesome. We got to get in on that.
Yeah, it's really cool, yeah.
If you could only see, close up, the little gears in Richie's head ticking right now.
Well, when we're done with this, I want to send you a link, because we just played a massive game, our biggest Artemis game ever, and we did a little behind-the-scenes video of it, and we did it at Tony's studio. We had 3 bridges. We built an engineering room. We added different role-playing aspects to the game, and we used one of the forum members, this guy named Aru, built this GM sandbox that that we actually used, so he can call the game like a dungeon master, pretty much.
Yeah.
Right.
And he had all these events, and we bought Nerf guns, and there were away missions, mm-hmm. and we shot each other, and then so it was a lot of fun, and all this stuff was possible because of your game. And yeah, it just as and we just took this and said, wow, someone gave us the opportunity to go play in outer space. we can play here now. And now as Tony and I are not content to just leave anything be, so we're always like, well, what can we add to it? Let's do this. Let's do this. Oh, wait, you can do DMX lighting? Let's go buy some lights. Yeah. You know what I mean? So we went crazy. But I actually I took a few questions from the from the forums, if you don't mind.
Sure, absolutely.
Can you explain the Zimni race and how it'll impact the game and when we can expect to see it?
Sure. Well, first off, you have to understand that, I'm not trying to be a purist about working alone.
Right.
It's just that generally, being a lone wolf works for me. But Artemis is such a big deal, and so many people have been part of it,
that I'm not such a lone wolf anymore.
Right.
A good friend here in town, Mike Sussley, volunteered a while ago to be my.
Hold on, Tom. I'm gonna call you back really quick because I just lost the quality got really weird. I'm gonna call you back.
And we're back.
Sorry about that.
Well, no problem. I understand. So I was explaining about Mike Sebstelny and how he has taken over writing the backstory and the corpus, the history of My Artemis game.
Okay.
And he was the number one fan of bringing in a second player race.
Right.
He wanted more ships. Wanted a different way. He wanted more opportunities for people to role play and do PvP, you know, in a way where people could be different races.
Right.
So the Zimni were his idea. I still thought it was a good idea. So we are, he's got a lot of backstory on the forums. He's got lots of good descriptions about what they're about. I've got some Zimni ships that I purchased from an artist.
Okay.
That have yet to go into the game, but will go in soon.
Cool.
And he was thinking that since the game has both jump drive and warp drive, that the Zimni would be the source of the jump drive, and that normal Terran Stellar Navy would be all warp drive.
Okay, interesting. Now, with a new update, do you plan on adding more mission scripts to the game?
Yeah, I'm, you know, me making more mission scripts is down on my list. I have a giant list
right.
of things to do that I will never get done.
Right.
It's just too long and has too much stuff from the fans. But, you know, there are a lot of fans who have done a lot of great scripts, and most of them are posted on my game forums.
Right.
So if I have to curate, then I'll take some of them and import them and make them part of the, you know, released game.
Right. Okay. I just got a couple more questions. First one I want to ask you is, this is a big thing, because any word on the iOS fix?
It's a fiddly problem, and I've been fussing with it along with my engineer, Tim, who works on my iOS and Android versions, for all of Christmas.
Okay.
And it's been frustrating, and we're still working on it.
Okay. Now, we have one last question for you. Actually, I'm going to make this a multi-part question. Do you have any, are you going to add any voice chat to the game anytime soon?
You know, nobody's really asked me to do so very much. You know, it's not a piece of technology that I particularly, you know, want to try to work on myself.
Right.
I mean, we just had a Skype session that sucked.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you know, this is one of those things where I'm like, do I really want to program?
Right.
You know, I'm not going to be as good a programmer as all the programmers they have at Skype, right?
Well, I see what you're saying.
So I'd much rather people continue their own solutions like Skype or Ventrilo or the other voice over IP solutions that they already use.
Okay. And now our last question Tony wants to ask you. Go ahead, Tony.
So, what I would love to know is, during your future preparations for everything that you're doing, would you ever need, or could we be a part of this in any way, is to help you out maybe perhaps with voice acting, which is something that me and Richie do, you know, in our line of work either way, but want to know if you ever would need something like that.
Okay, well, I appreciate the offer to help, but... But it was my turn to actually have a problem with the phone. I didn't exactly hear what you were offering.
Tony wants to be a voice actor in Artemis. That's what he wants to do.
In so many words.
I have a professional recording studio here in New York. SSL console. We have literally everything top of the line. And me and Richie actually do voice acting and scoring and different things like that. So we would both like to know if you needed... Is there any way we could help out to doing stuff like that? How do I ask this question?
No, I appreciate the offer, and you know, I don't. As far as the base game goes, I don't necessarily need any voice acting, but voice acting in scripted missions is very possible. And if
that's
you know,
what I mean,
if
when there's
you
a
guys,
text, right?
Yeah, but you have to go.
Okay,
on the...
so
Right, you have to go on the forums and find out someone who's making a scripted mission and offer it to them, because that because he's got to worry about the game and the users at this point, right? Am I right, Tom? The users are making the scripts?
Yeah, the users basically make the scripts now. That doesn't mean that I can't be convinced that particular scripts or particular opportunities might not be good, but generally speaking, the scripts are where the voice acting can be used.
Cool.
You know, when I started off making Artemis, I really didn't even have any music. And I thought that I would get around to writing music for it myself.
Well, are you a musician?
Well, you know, I sucked. I grew up in a very musical household. My mom was an opera singer and my dad played jazz. And, you know, everybody in my family, you know, did band in high school and all that. So I can pick up lots of instruments, but I'm not good at any of them. And, but, you know, also, you know, I went through the tracker phase and did some, you know, digital music with software back when I was programming the Amiga.
Right.
So, you know, I'm familiar with that stuff. I was thinking about it, but then a guy named John Robert Match, just showed up and said, you know, I'd really like to compose for you.
Wow.
And, you know, and his stuff was really great.
It's wonderful. So, it's great music.
It's wonderful.
Very good.
whenever the trombone comes on, we all laugh, though.
I love it. It feels so old school, like original
series.
No,
it feels exactly the way you want it to feel.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like you're in, like, an awesome sci-fi Star Trek movie, and there's awesome scoring happening around you.
It's very well done.
It's majestic.
I want to ask you one more question before we go.
I have a question.
Oh, you have a question?
Well, ask your question first.
You go. Go ahead.
No, because you might be asking my question.
Go. Are there any other non-Artemis projects that you're working on right now that you'd like to share with somebody or anybody?
Well, not, you know, the truth is for every game that I actually sell, there are 10 that are unfinished sitting on my hard drive.
Right.
I'm constantly thinking up new ideas and getting inspired by crazy things. But, you know, definitely my big hit, the one that's made me the most money and the one that's been most well received since I started selling games indie, has been Artemis.
Okay.
And I don't have anything in my back pocket that, you know, I can't wait to tell anybody about.
Okay.
Oh, I was just curious how into Star Trek you are.
Well, of course, I grew up with Star Trek, you know, and there's no doubt that Artemis was inspired by Star Trek. In fact, you know, a funny story about Artemis is that I had the idea back when I was 18, and that's a long time ago. You know, me and my buddies had Commodore 64s, and I thought, wouldn't it be great if we hooked up the machines together and they were different workstations on a Starship bridge?
Right.
And so, you know, even back in that day, I actually hooked up some wires and got some rudimentary communication between the two computers, but that's as far as I went at that time. So I was carrying around that idea, which was inspired by Star Trek, for the longest time before my muse said, you know, you got all the pieces. There's no excuses to get it done.
Right.
So, but yeah, I always loved Star Trek, and I've seen all the movies and shows. And, you know, what are you gonna do?
Is there any place where our listeners can go find out about what you're up to, or do you have a Twitter or a blog or website you'd like to promote?
Well, definitely. Right now, my own forums on Artemis.eochu.com. Or the Facebook post, the Facebook page of Artemis SVS are the places to go if you want to know the latest going on with Artemis.
Very cool. Anybody else got any questions? Or
I think we're good.
We good?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Tom Robertson, thank you so much for calling into Band Geek. You've been awesome.
Thanks. It's a pleasure. I always like talking to fans who really like the game.
We love it, and I'll send you a link to that thing I was telling you about, and I'll let you know when the show's done, so you can, because we're going to surround this with some musical bits. So,
awesome.
So thanks again. Have a great night.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
Okay, Tony, on Sunday, did you have any idea that you'd be speaking to Tom today?
Oh my God. Oh my God. I had no idea. It's funny because we joked around about it. Like, you know, I wonder what he was thinking when he did this. And I wonder if this is going to happen. And now we just got to completely ask him everything we wanted to ask him. It was
so freaking cool. And really, really nice guy. And I thank you again, Tom, for doing this. You made our freaking year. This is awesome. So yeah, thank you.
This is a lesson we teach on Band Geek a lot. If you enjoy your heroes, just find them and call them
and
or
stalk
email them.
Them
or go to their house.
just ask them.
Artemis, just like we talked about in the interview, Artemis was exactly to the T the game that me, Richie, and Damien sat down, and Richie was saying, "He's like, well, you know what I want? I want someone to be driving. I want to be on the guns, and I want somebody to be in the background, like running in, trying to put out a fire. Like, I'd even do that. I don't even care. Like, I'll run around trying to put out a fire while my friends are driving." And then all of a sudden, Richie found Artemis. We played it.
The closest we ever got to that was when we were playing, I'm sorry to mention it, Galaxies. Star Wars Galaxies. They had like a Tony, don't cry.
Oh. Wait, moment of silence.
No, every time I mention Galaxies, Tony, it's like I mentioned Tony's girlfriend who died or something, right, by a car.
Well, now that you mention that too. Jerk.
But no, it's like, okay, really quickly.
I love that game.
Galaxies is the reason I'm in Blue Oyster Cult. But the,
one for the homies?
It really is, because Eric and I used to play that game together, and that's how we sort of became friendly.
Eric called me my tag for like 3 years. Oh, yeah. He goes, oh, Darker Phoenix. I was like, oh.
Yeah, except like we said in the interview, that was the problem, was that game was still, you were
no,
in your home.
That's Star Trek. Well, no, that's Star Trek Online, but Galaxies came close because there was one thing.
You were
thing,
still in your own individual
home. Well, right,
homes.
Right, but they it was the kernel of it was there. Like, there was one guy flying, one guy would go up and take the guns, and one guy can run around and put out fires.
Yeah, it was definitely the closest we felt.
The kernel of that idea was in there.
Galaxies had a lot of things they did right, and then obviously what was wrong is that nothing was happening. But at first glance, that was one of the first MMOs we all played, and like, I remember I was so excited because my character had to do something in another town. I didn't know you could fly there, so I never really played an MMO before. And so I ran over the dunes of Tatooine for like 45 minutes. My friend Vinny came over. He goes, what are you doing? I'm like, this is awesome. I've been running in a video game for 45 minutes, and I'm not even there yet. I'm like, I'm just watching this shit. It's great. You know. And me and Damien, one of our friends, me and him were dressing up as stormtroopers, and we were sitting around Tatooine and acting like guards, just you know, make sure everything's okay. It was phenomenal.
I remember coming over and watching Richie play Galaxy, and he's like, this is my house, and now I'm going to do a dance.
That's actually what he does in his real house, too.
He does.
It's like, I put a table over here. Now I'm going to do a dance.
Was that the drum roll, please?
Ghost drummer.
Let me just explain this to you really quickly.
I don't want to leave
the Artemis topic, but we have to talk about Galaxies. We have to give it props.
This podcast should be called Definition.
Before you jump to Galaxies, can I tell you about the best thing that happened on Sunday?
Well, you could, but I'm gonna come back to Artemis.
No, I
go.
Ready? There was a holodeck.
Oh, right!
During the middle of the game, when we took a break, everyone was instructed to go to the holodeck. And Richie, Damien, and Andy.
The captain's trio,
played Fly Me to the Moon, Riker style.
You know what? I might as well just play it for you. All right, here you go. Welcome to the holodeck, folks. The holodeck. Wait a minute, are these musicians gonna come to life and take over the ship? All the true Star Trek fans will know that Commander Riker is playing the trombone. So I have trombone.
Yep, give me a one. Be around. Two, one, two, three.
Okay, so if you watch Star Trek,
amazing
Captain Riker or Commander Riker, he plays trombone poorly. So that's my best.
Not that poorly.
Yeah, he was better than that.
He was better than this.
Point, Anne-Marie.
He was better than this, but I was doing my poor impersonation of his mediocre trombone playing with my bad trombone playing.
But you did the leg thing really well.
Oh my God! If anyone has not seen it, I advise you to go to the internet and find Riker.
Find the internet.
Find Riker stepping over every chair on the starship at the Enterprise.
And then find him playing trombone.
So
you were the hip.
When we started doing the planning for Sunday, we really wanted to have laser tag guns, but we couldn't afford them.
Nope.
So we used Nerf guns instead, very inexpensive, and we decided to play in the honor system. But then there was a controversy, what we're calling Nerfgate. So Andy, what is Nerfgate? What's Nerfgate, Andy, bro?
Nerfgate was Nerfgate was I don't know.
you're great on podcasts.
Thank you.
Want a game master perspective of Nerfgate?
Go ahead. What's Nerfgate?
So Nerfgate was when I was game mastering, I sent out the bad guys who were playing everything from the NPCs to bad guys, and they're in the rooms waiting for the players to come in there. And the players have guns, the bad guys have guns, and they fire
each
other.
And right there is the problem.
if they
knew that the players were coming off the ship, and they knew they were coming in the room, and they were going, they knew when that was happening. They were totally prepared. They were just waiting for someone to
The first time it happened, he told me that, and I went, oh. So I told him, and they were supposed to be in the back, and then the rest of the game they were. But the bad guys are firing the good guys, and if the good guys get hit once, they're out. So we had a lot of events of the bad guys coming back and saying, I shot this person. And then he'd be like, yeah, I shot the same person, and I shot that person. And he'd be like, and then the person would be like, no, I didn't get hit. I literally, as I reffed once, just kind of see how it was going, and I saw somebody get hit. And then the person looked up. He looked behind him. He kind of glanced at me. It was all in a matter of 1 second. And then just tried to walk again, and I went, I think you got hit. And he went, no, I get hit. And then another hit comes in. I see the bullet come in, and it ricochets like crazy. So it obviously hit him. And then he looks up again, looks back, looks at me, and then starts walking. I go, you're hit, wounded, get out. And he goes, what? No.
Yeah, the way we played is...
I was standing right there. This actually happened.
Did you see that?
Yeah, it was me in the corner.
Oh. That's her in the spot.
I knew you were going to fucking say that.
But the other problem I noticed was that since the so-called bad aliens were wearing costumes and masks, they couldn't see anything
or feel anything.
So when they got hit, they didn't even know.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
It was tough. I mean...
And the room's filled with smoke, and it's really dark.
Plus, if you're wearing anything more than a simple shirt, like me and Richie tested, you can't feel the hit. So,
it's okay. It was
fine. If Anne-Marie shoots you in the face, you totally feel it, which is
fine. Well, the thing is, the rule we had when you do like these away missions is you go down to the planet, and if you get hit once with a Nerf bullet or Nerf dart, which doesn't hurt, but it's a little sting for a second, and you can tell you get hit. But when you're running around
and
you have costumes on, or if your adrenaline's going...
And it's competitive, yeah.
Yeah, it's competitive. You know, but I think we solved that for next time by saying, three-hit kills. Because this way, when someone goes in there, and they're excited to go in there, and they get killed instantly, they don't feel slighted that they have to leave, immediately.
No, but honest, you can't even... I was just wearing a t-shirt, thin yoga pants, I still barely could feel.
You're not,
if I got
it depends
hit.
Where you're hit. Definitely,
there was just one shot that I totally felt in the middle of my gut. Got shot.
The funniest thing was one of our friends comes out of the room with a dart stuck behind his glasses and he goes,
in his eye.
Yeah, I got hit.
Yeah, Raphael.
I definitely got hit.
Oh man, that was my favorite mission. I went in there like a sneaky raccoon in the night.
I was naked and I barely felt the darts.
That was
the after. You know when you go
that
out.
That wasn't the fog mission.
No, but this was the after. If like you go out to a bar one night and you're like, oh man, I feel my muscles hurt. I don't know what happened last night.
What happened last night?
I texted Richie on Monday and I said I found extra darts in my pants and they weren't in my pocket.
Oh, speaking of which, there are these little blue and orange darts littered everywhere in the house and everywhere in Phoenix Studios.
Yes,
Anne-Marie, those are the ones that I brought that were in my pants.
No!
That's gross.
That's what I get for shooting you in the head.
So
this will sound dirty, but one of the best things I remember is everybody was getting shot. You know, some people we had the whole thing going back and forth about people getting shot, and everyone's running the room. And the room is fogged out completely, and the mission was to get to these three so-called quote unquote beryllium spheres, which are actually three glowy LED blue balls that are for dogs to go fetch. So they're hidden across the room. Anne-Marie runs in the room and she disappears like. Into the fog,
like the night.
And you see, choo, 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 choo. She's like Archer-D2 running through fire, doesn't get shot. She goes to the end. I see the blue balls. All I can see is because they're lit up in the fog, and they get picked up in the air, all three of them. And I thought it would be one person at a time. I get them. She picks up all three. She's running out. She's like a beacon of light, like a paladin running through like zombies. Like, she's like running through, and people are shooting. And she's running through. I'm like, she's not shot. She's going to make it. All of a sudden, Margarita comes from behind the door. I don't know if you knew this. And Margarita takes a gun out, like slow motion. Like, she aims the gun right at Anne-Marie. And she fires, and the gun misfires. And Anne-Marie comes to me, and I go, did you not get hit? She's like, open the door, open the door, open the door. She goes out. She's like, whoa.
Anne-Marie, I gotta out Anne-Marie for a second. Anne-Marie was so amazing. Pissed at me because not because of the game, but because of how much
because
work.
Because of what you turn into.
Yeah, well, I turned into crazed, and how much work went into it, and how late we were there all the time. And so.
Because it's not like we have day jobs
she,
and have to be up at 6.
No, no.
Okay,
like
so
that.
We set up the night before, the day before.
Yeah.
And Tony said, get there at 5. I was doing some stuff. I got there at like 8 or something. We were there until
4.
Like. Four?
Yeah.
Four. He got home at 4:30.
Even later. Yeah, a little later than that.
We left at 3:30, and you guys were still going strong.
And I was only about 40% where I wanted. There was just, you know what the thing is? The way we were doing things, we always try to simplify it, but some of the things we try to simplify actually made things worse.
You keep on using that word.
I don't think it means what you think it means.
No, but next time Tony and I are, like, basically, he and I have been emailing back and forth, trying to say, okay, what worked, what didn't work, what must be eliminated, and I'm not going to mention that on the podcast. That would be very boring.
I truly think that everything that we did talk about is going to correct it, and it'll be much better.
Yeah.
In summation, I think we had an excellent time, and to celebrate our excellent time, I think.
I just want to say one more thing.
Damn it, he ruined the whole thing for you.
I'm sorry, Muff. Really? I was in the middle of telling something.
Richie, you're always in the middle of telling.
No,
something.
But you interrupted me. So listen.
Ooh.
When.
Ooh, Anne-Marie sleeping on the couch tonight.
Anne-Marie was so pissed, but she knew I was like emotionally like spent, and then I just put all this work into it. But I could tell how angry she was because she wasn't talking to me, but she was just going like.
This is after. This is not while we're playing because actually playing was fun. It's
and I'm going. And I'm going.
4-hour pack down. Sucked.
And I'm going like, oh my god, my poor wife hated this whole thing. And she just did it for me. I'm like, she's amazing. Like, she really just endured this thing that she totally can't stand just because she knew it was important to me. And I said, you know what? That's really nice of her. And I was thinking, like, I was really touched by it. And I'm like, too bad she didn't like it because it's something I'd like to do again. And then the next day, I'm going through the SD cards because we put cameras in every room. And we'll show some of the footage soon. And
even in the space bathroom.
We put cameras in every room and so I'm looking through it, and then at the end, I'm just going through some of the clips, and I see the last clip where we killed the big bad guy. And at the end, as soon as we kill it, I see my wife jump up in the chair and goes, yeah, motherfucker! Yeah! I'm going, and I called her, I'm like, you are full of shit. I was like, you had a good time. She's like, I did, but I don't want to deal with all this pack down and all this stayed up late.
It was fun. It's just, you know. It was, though.
It's just that she has to be up so early.
I have to be up at 6, I'm sorry, like 5:45 every
and
day.
She's supposed to be the better early just for her voice,
I'm
so
just,
it's like.
I'm just saying, it was just like an hour pack
did
down.
It?
No, it was not. It was a 3-hour pack down. I don't know what hour it took for
me. We ended at 9:30 and I got home at midnight.
Did it come off cool when you guys escaped the last thing and you ran out and the bad guy was waiting for you and you had to fight him?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, everything was great. But now I'm
that last battle was
back
insane.
Back to your wrap-up, Muff.
Oh, I was going to say that, in summation, we had a great time. We all encourage you to look up Artemis or...
Artemis Bridge Simulator.
Artemis Bridge Simulator. Or find something else equally as fun to do with your friends. If you are a geek and you do listen to this, the point that I was going to bring up when we had Tom on the phone was that the genius of his game is that it promotes creativity.
And being in the same room.
Not even that. It's just, like, the fact that people are able to do mods, do their own ships, make their own bridges. That he said that they're doing a convention. The fact that Tony, we added this D&D element and this ground crew and stuff like that. Yeah. It's like an immersive experience, and it so lends to it. But to celebrate our extraordinary experience on Sunday, I think it's time that we do a majestic space ballad.
I would agree with that. Are you up to the task, fellas?
Is this the only song of its kind? The I only am. Space ballad?
This is a space ballad.
Right, yeah. You wrote a space ballad.
No. There's a second space ballad.
Richie wrote What's a space, the space ballad.
The other space ballad that the same writer wrote for that movie.
Should I sing the first line of it? Take my love.
Oh, yeah,
take
right. This is a...
It's not a ballad.
This is a song that Diane Warren wrote for Star Trek Enterprise. And I remember being on the couch with Andy when this show premiered.
That sounded not right.
And I said, dude, this is so fucking awesome. There's a new Star Trek show. It's going to be amazing. Oh, my God. I can't wait to see it. It's a prequel. Oh, my God. And we're sitting on the couch together. And then I heard the first chord of this song. And I say, no, 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 wrong. So, of course, here we are covering this song. All right, let's get this happening. It's been a long road. You're getting from there to here. It's been a long time, but my time is finally near. And I could feel the change in the wind right now. Nothing's in my way. Yeah, they're not gonna hold me down no more. No, they're not gonna hold me down. Cause I've got faith of a heart. I'm going where my heart will take me. I've got faith to believe I can do anything. I've got strength of soul, and no one's gonna bend or break me. I can reach any star. I've got faith. I've got faith. Give of the heart. It's been a long night trying to find my way. I've been through darkness. Now I finally have my day. I can see my dream come alive at last. I will touch the sky. And they're not gonna hold me down no more. No, they're not gonna change my mind. Cause I've got faith of a heart. I'm going where my heart will take me. I've got faith to believe I can do anything. I've got strength of the soul. No one's gonna bend or break me. I can reach any star. I've got faith. I've got faith. Listen to Band Geek. I'm Richie Castellano. With me is my co-host Jared Pressman.
Red Six standing by.
Andy Escalise on keyboards.
Red 5 standing by.
Tony Hansen, our special guest on drums.
Red 5 standing by.
My wife, Anne-Marie Castellano on bass.
Red October standing by.
And his wife, Brandy Metaxas.
Simply Red standing by.
And we'd like to thank our amazing special guest, Tom Robertson, for calling in.
Yeah. And for making the greatest game ever.
That's right. All right, guys. See you next time.
Bye.
Oh, God.